Good evening, it is 5 p.m. and this is Today in YGK on CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. Today in YGK is brought to you by CFRC's News Collective. CFRC's news programming is made possible by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and here are your local news headlines. City Council decided last night that Kingston will be joining other municipalities in opposing new bike lane legislation being introduced by the Government of Ontario. The proposed bike lane restrictions are part of the Reducing Gridlock, Saving You Time Act, which includes a list of changes to tackle traffic congestion. While bike lanes are currently under municipal jurisdiction, the legislation, if passed, would require municipalities to seek approval from the province before installing bike lanes that would result in the removal of lanes for vehicular traffic. The province would also have the authority to review existing bike lanes and decide whether they should be removed. Prabhmeet Sarkaria, Minister of Transportation, stated in the release announcing these changes on October 15th, quote, "Cities in Ontario have seen an explosion of bike lanes, including many that were installed during the pandemic, when fewer vehicles were on the road and their impacts on traffic were unclear. Too many drivers are now stuck in gridlock as a result," end quote. However, Ontario municipalities have been responding in opposition to the proposal, Kingston being the latest. Councillor Brandon Tozzo brought forward the motion to oppose the new regulations. Laying out the argument before council, touching on safety, cost, the impact on the city's goal of increasing active transportation, and the politically driven nature of the proposal.
The Ford government is seeking to override municipal decision-making and remove bike lanes at an extremely high cost to the province. Why? Why is this the priority of council? This is about bike lanes, but this is also not about bike lanes. The Ford government has found a wedge between voters, between suburban voters who commute via their car and urban voters who rely on active transportation and public transportation. They're betting suburban voters will side with them, and they're willing to pay to remove bike lanes just to spite urban voters. This is cynical, divisive politics. This is about winning the next provincial election by putting one part of the electorate against the other. I hate this kind of politics.
The city's Commissioner of Transportation and Public Works, Brad Joyce, also confirmed that this provincial interference would greatly impact the city's current projects, and many of those under the Active Transportation Master Plan, which aims to increase active transportation to 20% of all trips by 2034. Councillor Gregory Ridge seconded Tozzo's comments, pointing out the flawed messaging in the proposal and questioning the provincial government's priorities.
I just want to say, like, you know, for a government that touts itself on being like conservative, common sense legislation, when I'm driving my vehicle, usually to pick up my son or to drop him off at daycare, and there's a cyclist that's in the lane in front of me, that is a far bigger, A, it's not safe for the cyclist. There should be bike lanes there to protect them, but also that slows down traffic way more than anything else possibly could, because one would hope everybody is being as cautious as possible. It just doesn't make any sense. It makes literally no sense. Yeah, the reason that Councillor Tozzo provided is the real issue. It's very cynical politics. And I'm hopeful that when everything gets figured out by the province, that it won't have those negative effects on us, because it's really just about three bike lanes in Toronto. Let's be real about this. But I'm happy to support this motion. And I really wish that provincial priorities were placed elsewhere, like maybe healthcare or mental health, who knows, whatever.
Councillor Wendy Stevens also noted the flawed logic of removing bike lanes in favor of lanes for vehicular traffic.
Adding car lanes to deal with traffic congestion is like loosening your belt to cure obesity. It's absurd. It makes no logical sense. And so, yeah, this legislation, absolutely, it's pandering.
Councillor Don Amos also presented the argument many municipalities have been making in the face of this proposal, that municipalities know their own unique needs best.
You know, municipalities have a unique understanding of local traffic patterns, infrastructure needs, community priorities. As such, they're in the best position to make decisions about transportation improvements, like cycling lanes. This provincial intervention undermines local governance, restricting municipalities' ability to address transportation issues independently, decisions affecting municipal roads and traffic flow should remain under municipal jurisdiction to ensure they are tailored to the community's specific needs.
Councillor Tozzo closed the discussion, urging council to join the Association of Municipalities of Ontario in rallying against this decision.
I think I just want to comment on the comments around the table, which I think just highlight that this is a Toronto problem and a Toronto solution. But we have a provincial government, and I think it just speaks to where their priorities are. This is a government supposedly committed to cutting red tape. They're adding red tape. They're having the province look over where we're putting in future bike lanes. I'm sorry. That's unacceptable. This is a government that's prioritizing alcohol in corner stores and ripping out bike lanes in municipalities. And we're experiencing a housing and homelessness crisis, a doctor shortage, and problems in our education system. Just a sage piece of advice I will end on. We are told to stay in our lane of municipal government. The province has to stay in their lane. And we need to stay in our municipal lane of expertise when it comes to bike lanes. Thank you very much.
The decision to support Tozzo's motion opposing the new bike lane restrictions was unanimous. Comments on the provincial proposal are due by November 20th, 2024. This has been Christina Laurie with CFRC News, supported by the Local Journalism Initiative.
Hello, everyone. This is Ali Safadi, CFRC's Campus News Reporter, and today I bring you a segment that reflects on the life of a truly remarkable man, Murray Sinclair. His recent passing leaves a void, not only in the lives of those who knew him personally, but in the heart of the Canadian nation. This is a man whose life's work was devoted to truth, justice, and reconciliation. His legacy, shaped by decades of tireless advocacy for Indigenous rights, will resonate through the generations to come. Murray Sinclair, a member of the Pegus First Nations in Manitoba, dedicated his life to advocating for Indigenous rights, healing, and the pursuit of truth. He became a well-known public figure through his role as the chair of the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, the TRC, of Canada, where his leadership helped uncover the dark history of residential schools. His work revealed the painful truth of the harm these institutions caused to Indigenous children and families. And in doing so, he gave voice to survivors who had been silenced for far too long. Born in 1951, Sinclair's early career was focused on law, where he made history in 1988 as one of the first Indigenous judges in Manitoba. His legal career would span decades, but his work with the TRC is what most Canadians remember him for. Under his guidance, the TRC held hearings and gathered testimonies from thousands of survivors, ultimately producing a report that outlined 94 calls to action, which urged the Canadian government to make concrete efforts towards reconciliation. Sinclair's contributions were not limited to the TRC. As a judge, he presided over numerous cases that helped define the legal landscape for Indigenous rights in Canada. His wisdom and compassion were qualities that transcended the courtroom. He became a respected voice, both within the legal community and in Indigenous communities across the country. Throughout his career, Sinclair received numerous honors and accolades for his work. In 2009, he was awarded an honorary doctorate from the University of Winnipeg for his tireless advocacy for human rights and justice. He also received a Laureate Award from INSPIRE in 2016, recognizing his outstanding contributions to advancing the rights of Indigenous peoples. His leadership and tireless commitment to truth earned him the respect of both Indigenous and non-Indigenous communities alike. Queen's University, where Sinclair was awarded an honorary degree in 2014, also paid tribute to his memory after his passing. According to the Queen's Gazette, Sinclair was celebrated not only as a leader in law, but also as a mentor who used his position to advocate for change, challenge systemic injustices, and inspire future generation of leaders. His role in the TRC's work had a lasting impact, and his legacy will continue to inspire those working toward healing and reconciliation. In his final years, Sinclair continued to advocate for the protection of Indigenous rights in the ongoing process of reconciliation. His words and actions serve as a reminder of the importance of truth, justice, and healing. As Sinclair once said, the truth about what happened in the residential schools is a story of survival and resistance. These words underscore his belief that reconciliation is not just about acknowledging the past. Reconciliation is about working toward a future that's built on respect, equality, as well as understanding. Murray Sinclair's legacy is one of strength, resilience, and hope. His work was never about seeking accolades, but rather about creating a future where Indigenous communities are empowered, recognized, and respected. Even in death, Sinclair's teachings and his call for truth and reconciliation continue to guide us. To all those who have been touched by his work, and to those who continue the fight for justice and healing, we honor Murray Sinclair's memory today and always. Before I conclude, I want to give you a preview of an exciting story I'll be covering next week, the AMS elections results. This year, Queen's students cast their votes for a range of key positions within the AMS, including the newly elected undergraduate student trustee and what their victories mean for the student body. This election has been intense, with candidates focusing on issues from campus inclusivity to sustainability, and I'll be diving into what this means for the future of our university. This has been Ali Safadi, reporting on the life and enduring legacy of the Honorable Mary Sinclair. Thank you for listening.
Hello, sports fans. I'm Christina Laurie, filling in for Isabella Garrido today. Welcome to CFRC Sports Desk. Today, we've got all the latest updates from Queen's University Athletics, so let's dive right in. First up, Queen's women's basketball had a strong weekend split in their home opener doubleheader. In a tough 64-56 loss to the Windsor Lancers, Bella Gaudette led the team with 24 points, including a stellar 6-9 from beyond the arc, and added 8 rebounds. But Gaudette bounced back in the second game, finishing the game with 26 points on 7-13 shooting from three-point range, securing the Gales' 71-66 victory over the Western Mustangs. Queens is now 1-2 on the season and will be on the road next weekend to take on the Algoma Thunderbirds. Catch the action on OUA.tv. Meanwhile, Queens Rugby had a dominant 52-14 win over the Western Mustangs in their OUA playoff semifinals, with Owen Lee scoring 2 tries to help secure their spot in the OUA Men's Rugby Championship. They'll take on the Guelph Griffins this Friday, November 8th at 7 p.m. And in rowing news, Queens Rowing had an impressive performance at the Canadian University Rowing Championships in Victoria, BC, with the women's team finishing 3rd overall and the men's team making 5th. The Gales earned 4 medals, including a gold in the men's lightweight 4 crew, led by Lucas Celia and Liam Shapland. That's all the time we have for now, but stay tuned for more updates. This has been Christina Laurie filling in for sports journalist Isabella Garrido with your CFRC Sports Desk. Now back to me with your weather report for this evening. Now for your CFRC weather report for this evening. Tonight, we're expecting mainly cloudy skies with a low of 9 degrees. Looking forward to tomorrow, Thursday, November 7th, we're expecting clearing skies with a high of 13 degrees and a UV index of 2 or low. On Thursday night, we'll have clear skies with a low of plus 4. On Friday, November 8th, we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 11 degrees and then clear skies at night with a low of minus 4. Looking forward to the weekend, on Saturday, November 9th, we're expecting sunny skies with a high of 6 and then clear skies with a low of 0 at night. Finally, finishing off the week, on Sunday, November 10th, we're expecting cloudy skies with a high of 9 degrees, and then at night, showers with a low of 8. That wraps up your quick weather report for this evening, and next up is your CFRC traffic report with Jesse Bell.
This is Jesse Bell from CFRC 101.9 FM, and this is your weekly traffic report for the Kingston area. Pavement rehabilitations will take place along Highway 401 between Westbrook Road to beyond the Highway 15 overpass and on the Sir John A. McDonald overpass. This work will consist of various lane and ramp closures over the next several months. Road closures. Abidon Road Highway 2 to Middle will be closed to complete enhanced flood protection of Abidon Road, Highway 2 and St. Lawrence Avenue. Albert Street, Princess 2486 Albert is closed until December 31st to accommodate construction activity and staging at 484 Albert Street. Collingwood Street, Earl to Union is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Cooper Street, Albert to Collingwood will be closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. Dufferin Street, Bagot to Rideau is closed until November 13th for servicing works. Hillcrest Avenue, Kings Court to 7th is closed for buried infrastructure replacement. Road will be open to local traffic. Kings Court Avenue, Hillcrest to Kirkpatrick is closed to accommodate a water main replacement. King Street, the tragically hip way to Place d'Armes, will be closed November 6th from 9 to 10:30 a.m. and 12:30 to 2 p.m. for Kingston Frontenac's school day pickup and drop-off locations. Sydenham Street, Johnson to Brock, will be closed November 6th from 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m. for crane activity to repair an elevator. Union Street, Willingdon to Albert, is closed for sewer separation and road rehabilitation work. University Avenue, Union to Earl, is closed for construction related to the Queen's John Deutsch University Center project. Victoria Street, Brock to Johnson, is closed November 4th and 5th for servicing works. Here are some other delays to keep an eye on this week. Aberdeen Street, Johnson to Earl, expect delays and closures along Aberdeen for a contractor to complete road and sewer reconstruction. Bay Ridge Drive, Princess to Taylor Kidd, expect delays while a contractor begins Phase 2 of the Bay Ridge Drive active transportation upgrades. Collins Bay Road, Prince Charles to Edwin and Princess, expect delays while a contractor completes Phase 2 of the Princess and Collins Bay active transportation improvements. Gardner's Road at Centennial and Creekford, expect delays while a contractor completes intersection widening, traffic signal updates, and cycling and pedestrian improvements. Highway 2, Abbeydon to St. Lawrence. Expect delays to complete enhanced flood protection of Abbeydon Road, Highway 2, and St. Lawrence Avenue. Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard at Elmwood. Expect delays while a contractor upgrades the intersection at Sir John A. MacDonald Boulevard and Elmwood Street, including replacement of street lighting, new traffic lights, replacement of asphalt on roadways, and a new multi-use pathway south of the intersection towards Bath Road.
Now it's time for your CFRC Community Events Calendar. If you're looking for something to do tonight, Something in the Water Brewing and Daft Brewing will be hosting their trivia nights starting at 7 p.m. And One Eye Jacks will be hosting their North End Board Games Night for free starting at 7. On Thursday, November 7th, the Kingston Public Market is open from 8:30 to 4 p.m. at Springer Market Square. You can also head out Thursday to Kingston Community Health Centers, which will host the weekly Penguin Seniors Social Club for individuals 55 plus from 9:30 to 11:30. Folks can also head over to Runner's Choice for the weekly Out in Front Running Group for 2S LGBTQ plus runners ready to run at 6:15 p.m. for 5 to 6 kilometers, followed by a post-run social. And of course, the Grad Club is running its popular weekly trivia night every Thursday starting at 8 p.m. On Friday, November 8th, the YMCA will host its weekly Fresh Food Market from 9:30 to 12:30. A great opportunity to get fresh food at great prices. Looking forward to the weekend on Saturday, November 9th. The Kingston Public Market runs from 8:30 to 4 p.m. in Springer Market Square. Also on Saturday, the Mess Studio Art Show and Sale takes place from 12 to 4 p.m. at 130 Clergy Street. On Sunday, November 10th, get up early and head over to Runner's Choice for an early morning long run starting at 8:30 a.m. And finally, the Memorial Center's Farmers Market will take place from 9 to 2 p.m., featuring food, artisanal crafts, and music. That wraps up your events calendar for today, and next up is Noah with your CFRC Concerts Calendar.
And now it's time for the CFRC Concerts Calendar for this week. Wednesday, November 6th, come see the Open Stage Drag Show, the first Wednesday of every month at the Grad Club. The show runs from 8 p.m. to 10:30. Admission is $5. Also on Wednesday, come experience an evening with Danny Michael and Steve Pultz at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts. Admission is $51.66. Don't forget to come visit Open Mic Night with Mike Rapkins at Hotel Wolf Island. A free show starting at 7 p.m. You can also head out to the Cove Inn from 5:30 to 8:30 for Wings and Tunes on the patio. Thursday, November 7th, Valley, Ren for short, will be performed at the Ale House and Canteen at 7:30 p.m. Admission is $27.50. Here, for original Thursdays, Shane Murphy will be performing rock and blues at the Cove Inn from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Admission is $15. Head over to Hotel Wolf Island to experience Clear Breeze, a free jazz and bossa nova performance running from 6 to 8 p.m. Later that night at Hotel Wolf Island, Rome to Wolf Island by Ilaria Pilar Patasini will be starting at 8:30 and run till 10:30. Admission is $30. Friday, November 8th, Shania Twink, your new favorite queer cover band, will be performing at the Broom Factory for $25. The show runs from 7:30 to 10 p.m. From 8 to 11 p.m., Whiskey Smoke, a divine country duo, will perform at the club at the RCHA. Admission is $5. The God Damsels and Edmonton All Country Band will be performing at the Cove Inn from 5 to 8 p.m. Admission is $10. Don't miss Motown Soul live at the Grand Theater starting at 6 p.m. Admission is $69. Dave Wickerham will be playing on the largest theater pipe organ in Canada, the Kingston Theater Organ Society, at 7:30 p.m. Admission is $25 and $8 for students. Aruna Antonella Honda and Michael Broadhead will be performing at the Musiki Cafe from 8 p.m. to 11 p.m. Admission is $15. At the Royal Tavern 2.0, two concerts are planned for this Friday. From 5 p.m. to 7 p.m., come see Chrome Heart. Then from 9 p.m. to midnight, come see Soul to Squeeze. Admission is free for both concerts. Free for All Fridays with music by Guido will take over Stages Nightclub from 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. The show comes with admission. The Celtic Kitchen Party will play live at the Tiernan Og Irish Pub. Admission is free. The show runs from 9 p.m. to midnight. Saturday, November 9th, head down to the Broom Factory to see Susie Ungerleader, who will be performing at 1:30 p.m. Admission is $30. Later at the Broom Factory, starting at 7:30 and running till 10, John Muirhead, Julia Finnegan, and Taylor Adams will be performing. Admission is $20. Roderick and Bearso, featuring Quentin Cotrio, will be performing at the club at the RCHA. Admission is $5. Head over to the Cove Inn to catch the weekend specials, performing live from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Admission is by donation. Be sure to catch some local talent, Jennifer Ann and Paula Wood, performing at the Creekside Bar and Grill from 7 p.m. to 9 p.m. Admission is $10. Take the ferry out to Hotel Wolf Island to see David James Allen and Brothers Gently for some country music from 8:30 to 10:30 p.m. Admission is by donation. At 7:30 p.m., Radio Rush, the moving picture story, is coming to the Kingston Grand Theater. Admission is $59 to $69. Come to the Mansion to see Atria, Nature Pleads Revenge, Crown of Antlers, Intolerate, and the Manhattan Project from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Admission is $17 to $20. Reborn, Songs of War and Peace, live at the Spire. Admission is $12 to $35. Tone Cats will be performing from 9 p.m. to midnight for free at the Tiernan Og Irish Pub. Sunday, November 10th, Field Guide will be performing at the Broom Factory from 7:30 p.m. to 10:30 p.m. Admission is $24.88. Sundays with Eric and Megan returns at the Cove Inn from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Admission is by donation. Don't miss Sadaf Amini, hosted by members of the Gertrudes, who will be performing live at the Elm Cafe from 2 to 4 p.m. Admission is by donation. Come check out Deborah Sherman's and Bathwash perform a Sunday matinee at Hotel Wolf Island from 4 to 6 p.m. Admission is free. Megumi Misaki, an innovative multimedia performance, will be held at the Isabel Bader Center for the Performing Arts from 2:30 to 4:30. Admission is $15 to $40. Sit Down Sundays with Doc McLean and Jeff Dunn will be held live at Monty's Lounge starting at 6 p.m. Admission is $20. You won't want to miss Orchestra Kingston's performance of Amadeus live at the Spire at 2:30 p.m. Admission is $75. Have a concert you'd like listed on CFRC's website and announced on our airwaves? Reach out at our website contact page at cfrc.ca.
Thank you for tuning in to CFRC's local news programming. To revisit episodes of Today in YGK and hear more from some of our guests, be sure to head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. Today in YGK is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, What'll I Wear, 732 Princess Street, and The Screening Room at screeningroomkingston.com. Be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
What'll I Wear offers the best in vintage, funky, one-of-a-kind treasures, clothing, accessories, and a fabulous selection of jewels, vintage and new. Find the cutest purse, the most dashing of hats and sunglasses, everything to complete your individual look. What'll I Wear has it all. They can dress you from top to bottom. Find your new fashion fave at What'll I Wear at 732 Princess Street in Kingston. Visit their new location and follow them on Facebook to keep up to date with what's in store at What'll I Wear.